Okay, these are going to be the audios that go for the respiratory system. The first couple pages of notes, I had put the instructions down on the paper that you should use the book, pages 814 to 823, to answer these questions. Now, about 85% of you have books at home. And if you do, and you already use the book to do that part, you can skip forward on this audio probably a few minutes. But for those that do not have a book at home, I'm going to go through the answers for the respiratory questions. And I did put pictures on the web page. I forget how I labeled it, something about book pictures or book images, something like that, that go along with these notes. So if you have that open, you can go either print out those pictures or just open them up on your computer while I'm talking about them. First, it says to identify the five main functions of the respiratory system. So, gotta remember, I told you a long time ago that, yeah, we're a multicellular creature, but every cell still has the same needs as a single cell floating in a pond. So, you're gonna need to get nutrients somehow into the cell, and you're gonna need oxygen into the cell. And for this system, this is gonna be this delivery of that oxygen to the tissues to keep it. Keep every individual cell having their needs met. So, number one, provides gas exchange between the air and the blood. And when you breathe in, the air that goes into your lungs is a half a micrometer away from your blood that's flowing through your lungs. It is the thinnest of all boundaries you can imagine. Number two is moving the air in and out of the lungs. I mean, we don't have time for it just to blow in and blow out. We need to exchange that air. Number three is that you have to protect the surfaces from environmental changes and pathogens. So, in the pipes leading into your lungs and the lungs themselves, these are pretty exposed tissues, as you can imagine. So, you do have to have protections for those tissues. Number four is that we use this system to create sounds for communication, and our sense of smell is linked to this. As we draw air in, some of that air, a small percentage, goes by the receptor sites in your nasal cavities for our sense of smell. So those are the five main functions as identified by the book. Next, list the parts that comprise the upper respiratory system. So if you do have a book, I want to open to page 814. Or you can pull up that picture from the book. And you can see in the drawing that they've separated into upper respiratory and lower respiratory. And the upper respiratory parts consist of number one, nose, number two, nasal cavity, number three, paranasal sinuses. And these are those little offshoots from the main nasal cavity. When you get sinus headaches, it's blockages of these from allergies or an infection of some sort working its way through there. And number four is the pharynx, which is we just call it the throat in normal conversation. So of the upper respiratory system, the three main purposes identified by the book. Number one is to filter, number two is humidify, and number three is warm the incoming air. So by the time it gets into your lung tissue, you need that air very saturated with humidity. You need lots of water vapor in the air that makes it to those tissues. You don't want to be breathing dust and bugs into there. And you want to raise the temperature of it so it's not shockingly different from the blood that it's going to be next to. Parts that comprise the lower respiratory system. So after we did the upper respiratory ended with the pharynx, so starting the lower respiratory, we'll start with the larynx, which is where your voice box is. Then number two, the trachea. Number three is the bronchi, which are the left and right main bronchi branching off of the trachea, digging into smaller tubes called bronchioles. And then the final are the alveoli, the tiny little air sacs where the gas exchange takes place. The two main jobs of the lower respiratory system are conduction, which means bringing the air to and from, And rest number two, respiration, which is going to be the gas exchange in the alveoli. So conduction and respiration are the two main jobs. So as far as the conducting system, what's identified as that, this is going to be a series of pipes that we draw air through. You don't do any gas exchange here. They're just conduits to bring in the air. Number one is the pharynx. Two is the larynx. Three is the trachea, four is the bronchi, five are the bronchioles, and six are the terminal bronchioles, the smallest of the tubes. On the next page, there's a series of questions. The first one is, what allows gas exchange to happen so quickly at the alveoli? And I kind of mentioned it in the intro there. It has to do with how thin the layer is between the air and the blood moving by. You literally have the capillaries are one cell thick, and the alveoli are one cell thick, and that's flat side against flat side. So it is a half a micrometer in thickness between the air and the blood. So it's a very short distance, and that's what allows this gas exchange to happen so fast. Next question says, surface area of the alveoli is said to be anywhere from 750 to 1500 square feet. Now, unless you're in construction or something, or you're really familiar with that kind of thing, you probably don't know exactly how big that means. But what I would compare it to is our classroom is about 900 square feet. It's 30 by 30. So try to imagine that if you were to spread out all the little alveoli of your lungs, if you were to lay them out flat, the surface area would be a little bit bigger than our classroom for the average pair of lungs. So that's a lot of surface area for the opportunity for oxygen to jump across that barrier and into the blood. How do mucus and cilia help protect your lungs? Well, for this one, I want you to flip your book to page 816. And they have a pretty decent little drawing here of mucosa and the structure of that layer. The cells crank out a layer of mucus, if you remember goblet cells. And that mucus doesn't just sit there. First of all, the mucus traps bacteria that maybe are inhaled in any way. And then that thick, gooey mucus has a constant flow out of your lungs. You have a layer of cilia, and as they whip in a coordinated manner, they move this mucus 24 hours a day out of your lungs. Now it just goes into your esophagus, and you're never even really aware of it, but it's this 24-hour a day cleaning system that you have. The next question is, how do nasal mucosa help prepare the air before entering the lungs? So the nasal mucosa, you have a considerable amount of blood flowing through just under this layer. And that blood, if you remember, our core body temperature is 100.4 degrees. As the air moves past the nasal mucosa, which has lots of surface area because of the folding of the nasal cavities, that air moving by it is warmed up. In addition to that, it's also covered with a mucus, which evaporates out water constantly, so that it's warmed up and it's humidified as it passes through. You want to get that air as thick with humidity and as warm as possible before it enters the lung tissue, so it's not a shocking difference down there. Number two, how is this related? Or the next question, how is this related to frequent nosebleeds for some people? Well, sometimes when the air is extremely dry, that mucus can't keep up with the water loss and it dries out. And since the blood vessels are right at the surface, when that tissue dries out and cracks, the blood vessels get torn. And then a lot of times in the cold, dry part of the winter, people will get frequent bloody noses from it, to the point that sometimes they need to cauterize those tissues because it's too often that they get bloody noses. Next, it says, how does the epiglottis protect your lungs? Well, when you're just breathing normally, this epiglottis. Actually, before I answer that question about the epiglottis, let's change the book page. Let's go to page 818. And when you get there, find the epiglottis that's in the middle of the left side labials, and it's this little flap that, and when you're just standing there breathing, this flap is in the open position, and the air goes through the pharynx and past this epiglottis and into the trachea. And it's normal for it to be in the open position like that. When you go to swallow food or drink, there's muscular contractions that pull the epiglottis down over the lid or opening of the trachea called the glottis. So when you're swallowing, since the flap closes, the food or drink goes past the epiglottis and down into the esophagus, which is the pipe that goes to your stomach. If you swallow or if you're breathing or laughing while you're swallowing and the epiglottis is in an elevated position, that's when you get something going down the wrong pipe, as we call it. The next question is, why do males generally have deeper voices than females? And for this answer, if you would flip the page in the book to 820 or pull that one open from the images category, the larynx is the heavy cartilage framed voice box. And what happens is during puberty, the males, the voice box gets considerably larger than females. And so the vocal cords which span across it are longer, and longer, thicker cords vibrate slower than shorter, thinner cords. So the frequency of the vibrations gives you your pitch. So long cords give a deeper voice. What is laryngitis? Well, we know that itis always means inflammation. So this is inflammation of the larynx, which interferes with the normal movement of the vocal cords to the point where it may even make you lose your voice. Next one, trachea, aka windpipe. How wide? It's about an inch. How long? About 4.3 inches. Purpose of the tracheal cartilages? Well, if you look at the picture on page 820, you'll notice that it's not solid cartilage because it's rings of cartilage, and that would What that allows is a little bit of flexure, flexibility to the tube. If it was solid, it would be, you couldn't bend it at all. So this allows it to bend some, but still gives it protection against crushing or collapsing. Why are they C-shaped? The open part, the backside of the trachea, running right in the same direction as it is the esophagus. And when you swallow food, it allows the esophagus to change its shape as the food works its way down the pipe. The last question, what does the trachea divide into? It's the left and right main bronchi.